BW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run. Or is it? Oh, a fielder. That's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great move. That's unbelievable. That is sensational.
Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.
Hey, welcome to Short, Fine Legs, South Africa's premium cricket podcast, which is now proudly brought to you by Orcor, Africa's favourite auctioneers. Orcor are the biggest hitters in online and live auctions, featuring the best brands in luxury and budget vehicles and trucks, as well as furniture, appliances and gadgets for your home and office. The Orcor team are also the biggest cricket fans out there, so naturally we're quite big fans of them too. Visit their website, www.orcor.com, or follow them on social media so you're kept up to date with their latest auctions. Hey, welcome to Short Fine Legs, the cricket podcast that's in action as frequently as the Australian men's team. But like Justin Lange and the boys, we maintain our unwavering self-belief and our claims to greatness. Is that too much? Maybe. I'm Daniel Gallen, and today I'm joined by former Lions and now Northwest all-rounder, Nono Pongolo. Nons, we can't get into all of it right now because we've got so much to unpack shortly. But quite a bit has happened since we last spoke, and just want to know, how are you doing?
Hey, Dan. I'm all good, man. I actually think you probably need to start a little bit in telling the people what has happened with you since we last spoke as well. It's been a while, but looking like we're on the upside of this pandemic now, and started a bit of training, had our vaccines, and a bit of traveling between Johannesburg and Potchefstroom at the moment. So yeah, enjoying the start of the off season at the moment, and it just seems like cricket season is approaching really quickly, and not too far away from that first T20 competition as well next month.
Yeah, good man. We're really excited for that. And joining us is one of the top sports journalists in South Africa, a multiple award-winning freelancer pioneer who has edited and worked for numerous publications, including The Times, SuperSport, SA Rugby Magazine, and New Frame. He is the former winner of the Vodacom Sports Writer of the Year and the Sasol Springbok Writer of the Year Award, Sim Nikiwe Abanisa. Sim, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Laka. All right, let's get cracking. And Sim, let's start with you and Cricket South Africa's Social Justice and Nation Building Hearings, abbreviated to the SJN hearings. Now, I'm confident most of our listeners are clued up, but just in case, could you perhaps sum up what they are and what they hoped to achieve?
So for me, it's basically we're doing what we really should have been doing with cricket all along, which is to basically have a proper look at the issues, you know, with the sport and race, discrimination, and my biggest take from sports has always, well, the so-called white sports, has always been that you've had so many people over the last three decades or whatever that have left the sport. And at no stage, it seems, had anyone actually gone back to those people and said to them, hey, what went wrong? What is it that didn't work for you as a black person in the system? You know, and my feeling has always been that if you did that almost as an exit interview, what you were going to end up with is a whole lot of sort of facts which basically collated in terms of you could sit there and be like, oh, so these are the trends in terms of these are the main problems. And you can write all of those things down and say, okay, these are the main problems. How do we solve them? So for me, sports like cricket and rugby just haven't gone down that path to kind of like get to the bottom of the lack of transformation in both sports. And SJN for me is almost a way at addressing that. Of course, what the SJN does is it affords the people who are aggrieved the moment, time in the sun, as it were, to be heard, you know, to have to air all those grievances that they never even got an opportunity to air. But for me, I look at it as a potential sort of tool to try and sit and work at, okay, how do we fix, you know, how do we fix the lack of transformation in our sport, simply because we've never tried to get to the bottom of it. So this for me is that tool.
There were some pretty harrowing, painful, and frankly anger-inducing testimonies from players, administrators, and coaches. But Nons, perhaps the most upsetting thing was that none of this was a surprise, really. As Simmer said, you know, so many black players have left the game. So many coaches have left the game. And there had to be a reason for it. And hearing the testimonies is like, yeah, I'm really not surprised to hear any of that, quite frankly. As a black professional cricketer yourself, what was it like for you hearing and watching these testimonies?
Geez, where do I start with that? Dan, I mean, as a person, I mean, I come from a sporty family, and like there's the Malamba side of my family, who could have been a protea back in the day, but obviously wasn't afforded an opportunity because we were in isolation at the time. And then I had one of my uncles testifying about the environment in cricket, Ukufu Ben Malamba as well. So I've got that background as well, where I was a fan watching from the outside and getting to hear stories about certain guys, how they've had ill treatment in cricket, and not being able to realize their potential in the game because of certain discriminations, you know, that they had to face. And then you fast forward it to a period where I'm a player now and I'm seeing it on the other side. And it's been really difficult because not only it's the environment hasn't been easy for players of color to thrive and be themselves and succeed. There's a lot of barriers, of course, your socioeconomic barriers as well, which come with the game in, that we play in South Africa. And that's, hearing those stories for me has been really difficult. And actually, even for me, I've just taken a moment to listen to other people's stories because, you know, a lot of people might not know this about me, but like I've only experienced, for example, since I've turned professional, I've only ever been coached by black coaches. So it's actually quite an interesting part to just stare back and listen to other people and the experiences, how difficult it is. And I'm not trying to put a color on this thing and saying it only happens because of white coaches and things like that. I'm just saying it's just my experience so far in professional cricket has been completely different to some of the stories that I've been hearing. And that's one of the reasons why I've just kind of just been sitting back and listening. And I think it's important for our country. We can't move forward without actually hearing these stories and actually realizing that the environment is not conducive for everyone to participate in this game that we love. And that for me has been the most important part of it. Getting to understand what's gone wrong and what can we do to change the environment to make it better for everyone going forward.
Now, if we had to pick one major talking point from the testimony, I believe that would be that of Paul Adams, a man who I've argued perhaps best typified the feel-good rainbowism that swept the country and our sport in the early years of democracy. A young coloured kid from Cape Town who bowled in the strange action who couldn't be more different from his contemporaries. He revealed that former teammates called him brown shit as part of a drinking song in a fines meeting. One of those teammates was current coach Mark Boucher. So Boucher has since apologised for this. But the backlash, of course, has not died down. In fact, a lot of people think that the fact that he's apologized is indicative that he did something wrong and that he should step down. He was already branded as part of a cabal that includes his former captain and current director of cricket, Graham Smith. And there have been accusations that Boucher should never have got the job in the first place because of his lack of coaching credentials. His results aren't good enough. I think he's lost 8 and drawn 2 of his 15 completed series. I mean, Sim, what's your take? Does Adams' account now make Boucher's position completely untenable?
The short answer is yes. And then I'm sort of gonna descend into the why it is that way. You know, I read Mark Boucher's affidavit, and you can tell. When he was younger, when he was playing cricket, and I think that one of the most important things we need to recognize about sports people is that they're the most in my opinion, they're the most selfish people I've ever met, simply because, you know, it's really important for them to things to be just so, for them to be able to perform. I mean, you can think of any great sportsman you can think of and try and imagine the people behind them. Those people probably don't, you know, those people probably spent their whole lives trying to support them to do that. And so if you're in a system that basically looks after you on the basis of your skin color, there's no real reason for you to, you know, to challenge that kind of status quo. So when I look at, you know, Boucher's sort of, it seemed heartfelt apology for his role in humiliating Paul Adams, it does strike me that it's a simple case of, you know, the guy is the victim of his, you know, of his upbringing / environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the system that he was part of at the time. That's fair enough. For that, I'm not, you know, willing to have a go at him. But the simple truth is, you know, there's so much that has gone around, you know, Mark Boucher, that you can't help but feel like this is, you know, the final straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of whether, you know, he's you know, whether his position is tenable or not. So my thing is, I mean, if you take it back to the whole qualifications thing, I'll be honest, I'm probably not as hectic about that, because I do feel that between whatever, you know, level of sort of qualification he did get versus his international experience, you add those two together, plus add the fact that he got, I think, about 4 trophies for, you know, for the Titans. You know, you add all those things together, you kind of come up with a guy who is ultimately qualified. But I also understand the fact that, you know, when you mention those series defeats, draws, as opposed to wins, I do also understand that had it been someone like Enoch Nkwe, who came up with those results and didn't have, you know, the paperwork that said he could coach the national team, it would be a totally different scenario. You know, we would have been hounding him on a weekly basis. Yeah. And so there's, you know, there's so much that's hung around. There's so much dark cloud that's hung around Mark Boucher. And I'll be honest, I don't think he's this, you know, this evil genius that, you know, lives in a darkened room and twiddles his thumb thinking about how he's gonna screw over the next black player underneath him. Same thing with Graham Smith, who, if I were to come up with something damning in terms of my judgment of him, and frankly judgment probably shouldn't be the right word to use there, is that he can be incredibly tone deaf, which unfortunately most South Africans, you know, have when it comes to, you know, interrelationships between the races and the country. So there's been this dark cloud of, you know, how did he get the job? You know, his qualifications, his performance after that. Now there's this. What's happened is, you know, black people who are interested in the sport are just so irritated, are so fed up that, you know, obviously the same name keeps coming up, that it kind of has, you know, become untenable, because all it does, you know, I'm not going to make the illogical step and call Mark Boucher a racist. I just don't know enough to be able to call him that. And frankly, there's probably not enough to out and out say he is. But what's happening is, in the interests of, you know, what's good for South African cricket, you know, if he cares about South African cricket or the Proteas like he says he does, it's almost one of those decisions that he probably has to step down. It's along those lines, not necessarily on whether he's the right person to coach the team or not. It's got a lot to do with, there's just so much conjecture around him. There's just so much around him that maybe the easiest way, you know, for cricket to breathe a little, for cricket to part, you know, to work a path forward, maybe he should be out of it, so that, you know, cricket can get a bit of goodwill from its public, because it hasn't for a good 2 to 3 years now.
And I suppose two things can be true at the same time, can't they? He can be qualified. He can be a good coach. You know, we can talk about the results in a separate issue, but I don't think Mark, you know, you said that you won't go so far as to say that Mark Boucher isn't a racist. I agree with you. I won't even go so far as to say that Mark Boucher is a bad coach. However, his tone deafness in South Africa in light of the SJN hearings, in light of the poor results, kind of culminates in this perfect storm where I believe he's got to go. I mean, Nons, as a player, you obviously have to respect your coach. Now, you can respect what Mark Boucher did on the field and was part of a great generation, but in light of this latest evidence and everything that's gone on, I mean, could you respect this man?
You actually take him back to a Temba interview. I think it was one of the press conferences before they had their camp in Potchefstroom. And it's almost like he was, you know, Mark Boucher had told him what's happened and told him about his testimony. And if they were willing to read it, he'll be happy if they do. And it's almost like the words that I remember Temba saying, he put them into his confidence in terms of what was happening and what he said in his testimony. And for me, it kind of speaks to a typical change room where obviously most of the things are being kept internally. And on top of that, you've got a coach that has clearly spoken to the players on his feelings and what he thought transpired. And most change rooms, like you said, it's most of the guys might obviously take what's being said. And you might have a few guys that maybe on the side might question it. And that maybe speaks to what Enoch Nkwe has said in his, resignation letter, if I may call it that, because it has been a difficult period for them for some time, where since SJN has started going around, and would have been difficult for the change room to go through what they've been through. But for me as a player, I think it is difficult, especially the players of color on the team, considering you know how you feel about what's happening with regards to the SJN. And I wouldn't know that if the team environment will be conducive to players airing their views and thoughts of what's currently happening or what they do feel should be the best way forward. I'm not sure about their environment. And that, for me, is kind of the issue at the moment, because looking at how they've handled certain issues when it comes to the Black Lives Matter movement, it kind of showed me that within the change room, there's also obviously divisions. There's not full agreement when it comes to certain things that do matter in South Africa as a whole. So I don't know that environment, and I don't know how they would have handled it, but I'm pretty sure there will be conversations on the side, especially the players of color. And I do hope that, you know, they would create a platform for them to be able to talk these things out properly, because I think we've been sweeping things under the carpet for some time. And this is such a big issue in South African cricket right now, to continue pretending that nothing is happening within the bubble, because they do a lot of protection for one another, keeping things internally. And there might be a few guys who might not agree with that, and I don't know how they would handle that going forward.
So, Sim, we've spoken about Enoch Nkwe's resignation. A report in the Times cited a difficult team management working environment, and that the former Lions boss felt that his inputs as assistant coach were not valued nor taken into consideration. He feels he has been reduced to being a cones boy. That's a quote. He does not feel he is part of the team. The article also mentioned issues of discipline within the Proteas camp. Now, we know from Cricket South Africa that they try to keep him on board. You know, Sim, as a guy who's followed Cricket South Africa, who's written very good pieces on Enoch, you've interviewed him a couple of times, you know, we're big fans of his work. What does this say about the culture within the camp? Now, we don't know, you know, Enoch hasn't come out and said directly what's happened. It's all a bit hearsay at this point. But, you know, as an observer, as a journalist, I mean, look, what's your reading of Enoch stepping aside?
I mean, the first thing I should say is, again, I wouldn't say I know Enoch particularly well, but obviously, you know, I've interviewed him twice or three times, and on each occasion I found him to be an absolute visionary. I'm a huge fan of that yeah. man's ability and that man's work, simply because if you wanna know what the future of South African coaching looks like, there's, you know, there's your identikit basically in Enoch. So this is a massive disappointment to me that he's felt pushed into a position where, you know, he's had to walk away rather than, you know, try and stick it out and make it work. And that's exactly it. You know, if he felt the only solution, you know, the only option at his disposal was for him to walk, it basically means on countless occasions when he tried to address whatever his issues were, that went unheard. And you have to, you know, you have to then look at it and think, you know, you have to look at it and question the culture, because a culture of excellence has to be the first thing. And if you're working on a culture of excellence, surely the voices that you've surrounded yourself with should feel free to have their input in terms of, you know, how the team is going to play, especially someone, you know, as decorated as Enoch is. So, you know, for him to, again, you know, I'm until we hear from, you know, from Enoch himself in terms of what the exact reasons were, you know, we can only go with, you know, with what it says on the, you know, on the Times article. If he felt he had to walk, then you have to question the, you know, the culture in terms of A, excellence, and then B, inclusivity, which, you know, in South Africa has been a buzzword. These guys went on a camp, I forget where exactly, in Mpumalanga. And, you know, they came back and they said, you know, there was now a spirit of respect and inclusivity for everyone. And, you know, it's not the wonderful documents, you know, when it comes to culture, it's not the wonderful full documents that you come up with. It is the, you know, the, whether it, you know, that culture that you wrote about lives in the team or not. And Enoch's decision to walk away from it all rather than stay and see it through, you know, to not want to be any part of it. I think that tells you, you know, that speaks volumes.
Dan, I mean, I'll just adding a bit to this. I mean, I think for me, you mentioned the Paul Adams testimony there earlier. And for me, actually, when you talk about the assistant job, specifically, what was quite revealing for me in the SJN was Ashraf Prince's testimony, actually, where he was referring to some of the chats that he had with Graham Smith regarding his job offer to be the assistant coach to Mark Boucher, actually, initially. So, actually, when we think about it, Enoch wasn't actually the first option to the South African assistant job, according to what Ashraf Prince said in his testimony. And one of the things that Ashraf Prince asked Graham Smith about was about actually his job description, because he knew that Jacques Cullis was coming in. He knew that Charles Langefeld was coming back from Bangladesh, or is it Bangladesh or Afghanistan, one of those. And, of course, they also made some inroads in getting Justin Ontong on board. So you could see that they were looking at a certain profile of players, former players, former Proteas. And one of the things that Ashraf Prince said was he asked Graham Smith straight, what are you looking for me to do in this team? Because you have Jacques Cullis, who's going to be the batting coach. I was a batter, and I would generally look after the batting part of the team. So if you don't have a particular role for me, then what is my role in this team? And I think this all goes back to that. When I read Enoch's statements or of his resignation, it speaks to that. Not having a clear, defined role of the assistant coach in the team. And it's kind of just been going back to that. And one of the reasons I say this is because Enoch Mgwe actually was a head coach of the Lions. Turned the Lions around in a year, winning 3 trophies, including the Mzansi Super League. And I've been coached by Enoch in 3 different stages of my life. At the amateur level, at Lions, and then, of course, in the Mzansi Super League. I know the type of coach he is. He is a head coach. Like what Butsim said, he's a visionary. He is very much strict when it comes to what he believes in. And for me, it goes back to that, is that did they give him a defined role that he can flourish? Because at the end of the day, they did mention that Inokwe didn't have the experience to be an international coach. So he was going to learn under Mark Boucher. And clearly, since he started being the head assistant coach, that hasn't happened for him. And those were some of the reasons that has forced him to walk away. And that, for me, is one of the places that we should be looking at and actually trying to understand more, is that what is the job of the assistant coach in the team? Because even today, I've seen names being, you know, put out. You mentioned other coaches of color when it comes to this role. And you're going to, are we just ticking boxes, trying to put a coaches of color in these positions without actually having a defined role for them? Or we actually see this as a place of growth for them, especially some of them who might not have international experience, to learn and grow? Upud Maketa as well was another coach who's lost out in the Proteas after being an assistant coach. So if we're going to continue in this path, I mean, we can put another replacement, Mandla Mashimai from the Titans. What's going to happen to him? What's going to happen to him? And these are the type of conversation I feel that we need to have, and someone needs to answer about this particular role in the Proteas, because clearly it's not for everyone.
The big issue is, you know, when you look at the conversations that, you know, when you look at the conversations that were being had with a guy like Ashwell, it's that whole mentality of, geez, Ashwell's a very outspoken guy. We probably would rather have him inside, you know, the camp, you know, or inside the tent, pissing outside instead of in.
Yes.
You know, it's that kind of, you know, when your level of thought processing about putting together a team to coach your national team is at that, is that, you do have a problem, because what you're playing is cheap politics as opposed to what's best for this team.
Yes.
So I want to turn our attention, and I want to end with this, to the way this whole thing has been reported. You know, I found it interesting that no journalists testified during the SJN hearings. I mean, a lot of journalists, your work, my work, a lot of people's work were cited. But no one really spoke about it. And you wrote an excellent piece in a column in the City Press titled, "For the Umpteenth Time, the Media Does Its Bit for Racism Status Quo." Now, anyone listening to this who hasn't read it, I highly suggest that you do so. What do you make of that, Sim, the lack of media representation at the SJN? I mean, do you think that there needs to be an interrogation on the way these stories are reported, on who exactly is entrusted with handling the keys as gatekeepers of the narrative?
Look, it might have been a good call. But by the same token, I think sometimes we give journalists way too much credit. At the end of the day, we're just a batch of guys who have a job. You know, one minute, I know that I'm basically diminishing the importance of the job in its truest sense. But at the end of the day, we guys who need, you know, who have a job to do. I think it might have helped, because what you then get is a sort of institutional reportage of, you know, of you know, of the facts around the game, or, you know, some opinion about what happens. But by the same token, you know, a lot of these stories, you know, you look at that, at how long these stories were there for. You know, Paul Adams is long retired. None of us knew when it happened as journalists. You know, none of us knew enough to be able to report it, which tells you maybe, you know, how little maybe the journalists knew in terms of, you know, the real stuff going on behind closed doors. So I at some level, I think, yes, it would have been a good call, because you then again collating, you know, all the information that's been written. You know, if you talk to me, I'll tell you about all the, I might tell you about my experiences, you know, having a colleague, having a colleague sort of say, geez, you know, for us to have black journals writing as well now is taking the whole quota thing too far, you know. That's something I heard with my own ears, and that's fine. You know, I did exactly the same thing that Paul Adams did, which was I kept my head down and I proved, you know, I tried to prove myself in my space, because, you know, that's pretty much what all the players try to do. You know, at the end of the day, you're a cricketer, you're not a crusader. Or at the end of the day, you're a reporter, not necessarily a crusader, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So my thing is, yes, it might have helped to come up with some of those examples so that you can get, a broader view than just, you know, from players and administrators. You know, maybe it's almost a representation of the public's view of it. But by the same token, I'm always loath to believe that, you know, journalists are these all powerful beings, because we have exactly the same problems that the rest of the free world has, and in our own offices, and we don't do anything about it. And so, you know, also, if you think it's so powerful, if you think we're so powerful, how many things have we written out about, you know, just talk politics now in government, and nothing has happened. So yes, it could have been done. But by the same token, I'm never sure how much is going to help, simply because if you got someone like me writing about some of my colleagues unintentionally or intentionally, I'd like to believe unintentionally, still sort of entrenching stereotypes, old stereotypes in, you know, with their own worldviews, even today, because that's why I wrote that, column. You know, if that's the case, then I'm never 100% sure where you're going to end up, you know?
I certainly believe it would have helped. I think having at least a handful of journalists reporting on their experience, like you did in your column, would have helped. Nons, we'll give you the final word, Chen. We're running out of time. So just in a minute or two, I mean, where does this leave us? What is the next step? You know, well, this is being compared to the TRC that happened in the early days of democracy. And looking back now with cynical eyes, that didn't really do much for the hollow ideal that Nelson Mandela tried to set out. Will this actually change anything? Will we see a recalibration in the culture of South African cricket?
I think that can only happen if we all really want to buy into that. I mean, I hate to sometimes make the example of the rugby side, who have also gone through their period of resistance, but eventually they have come across a transformed a national side. And every time I see Ia and his team and how they talk about their team, it's so good to see positivity around the national team and how they speak about each other and how together they are when it comes to on and off the field and what it means to represent the country that they love and playing the game that they love as well. And I hope that South Africa can get there one day. But we can't brush this under the carpet. We can't sweep this anymore. We have to tackle it. And the SJN for me has been really important for that, to start this conversation, to get these stories to the forefront so that everyone can hear. Yes, it's difficult for some people to listen without actually responding to some of these things. But it's important for us to create an environment. I mean, I've been saying, and I talk a lot about an environment in cricket and in my little capacity in some teams being captain, it's what we try to create. We don't want our kids one day to experience some of the things that former cricketers, current cricketers are experiencing in this country to make a living in this game. And that can only be done, I don't know if it's policies, and of course I hope that there'll be some recommendations from the SJN, but I just think in whole as a country, I do not understand why we are so resistant to this change in South Africa when it comes to the game, because to be honest, we don't have a World Cup, and what's the worst that could happen if we do try to open up for everyone, and we can have a different environment for everyone in this country when it comes to cricket?
Sim, same question. In a minute or two, will this change anything?
I hope it does. I look at the current chair of the new board of Cricket South Africa. Logan, comes from a history of fighting similar injustices. Having grown up, I think, in exile and come back to South Africa to practice the kind of law that, you know, that dealt specifically, you know, with these discrepancies in terms of how we view, you know, our society. So I think we do, in that sense, we've got the right person at the top. It's just a matter of implementation, hopefully with as little interference as possible from, you know, some of the people that remain in Cricket South Africa that have made it difficult, you know, for these things, you know, for these things to be addressed in the first place. Nons makes the point, you know, Nons makes the point that, you know, we don't have a World Cup from this thing. I mean, that's exactly the same thing for me. I always sit and think, why would people from rugby and cricket, you know, your typical fans, think that, yeah, we'd much rather go with just the 10% of our population to try and win things instead of tap into as much as, you know, as much of the rest as possible? It just makes no sense. You know, if you have the numbers, you will be stronger. And all you need to do is come up with the, you know, with the solutions in terms of how do we, you know, how do we, how do we access those numbers? Because that's the problem in South Africa right now. It's always been facilities. You know, if you show any talent from a rural area or a township, what happens? You get shipped off to a nice Model C school or former Model C school or a private school, and that's it. But you know, if the kids were coming, you know, had the facilities to come from wherever it is that they come from, then we wouldn't have half of these issues because we wouldn't have a discrepancy in terms of the, you know, the quality of cricketer you're producing from a very young age. But yeah, look, I really live in hope that these guys, you know, these guys have kept an eye on this. It all comes with the recommendations, and then the next thing is the intent to implement the recommendations. Because let's take the example of the whole Nicholson thing. You know, what happened there was there were recommendations. It took, what, 8-9 years to finally implement them.
No, well said, fellas, and fingers crossed this does lead to change. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Shout for LBW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run, or is it? Oh, fielder, that's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great hit. That's unbelievable. That is sensational. Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.